At Vistaprint, we know you've got that idea for your business, like the one that nails the trade show, levels up your brand, or makes your team say,
"We're really doing this."
But an idea is just an idea until it's printed on
signage, giveaways, custom apparel.
Once it's
in my hands, on my team, out in the world,
then it's happening.
It's so happening.
Vistaprint has thousands of products, easy design tools, and real support to turn that idea into something possible. Print your possible with code NEW20 for 20% off your first order at vistaprint.com.
The days are longer, the calendar's filling up, and I want to feel as good as this beautiful summer weather. That's why I've been loving Grunes. It's one daily pack of gummies that covers my greens, vitamins, minerals, and even has 6 grams of prebiotic fiber. So I don't need to juggle a complicated wellness routine on top of everything else. They taste amazing. They're easy to toss in my bag on the go. Plus, they're vegan, gluten-free, and HSA FSA eligible for reimbursement. Save up to 52% off with code PODCAST at Grunes.co. That's code PODCAST at GRUNS.co.
What is Toyota affordability? It's buying smart. Right now, your local Toyota dealer has great deals available on some of the most reliable trucks on the market, like the off-road ready Tacoma, rugged full-size Tundra, and the legendary 4Runner, each with the space, tech, and features to handle it all, from the worksite to the trails. It means driving for less with efficient hybrid options available, extending your overall driving range and delivering great MPGs, meaning bigger savings at the pump without sacrificing power. And it means trading for more. The Tacoma and Tundra are ranked number 1 and number 2 in resale value over all vehicles according to Kelley Blue Book, which can mean thousands more than average when it's time to trade in. That's Toyota affordability. Buy smart, drive for less, and trade for more. Shop Toyota.com or your local dealer for deals and details. Vehicles projected resale value is specific to the 2026 model year. For more information, visit Kelley Blue Book's KBB.com. Toyota brand average resale value is 53% versus the average vehicle at 45%. Toyota, let's go places.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? Maintain X is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With Maintain X, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try Maintain X for free today. Go to maintainx.com/AI. That's maintain and the letter x.com/AI.
Look at that outside.
Oh, God, that is ugly. U-G-L-Y.
Is that partially the light bouncing up?
No.
I can't tell.
That's black.
That's a wall cloud.
That's darkness. Darkness. Good morning, Metroplex. Thank you for being a Tolo. That stands for Turn It On, Leave It On, your home of the Cowboys and Rangers. Sean Sharif, RJ Choppy, and insider Bobby Belt trying to get you to another weekend as quickly as possible. Luke Bryan ticket giveaway coming up. We're commercial free. No reason to go anywhere else, and we'll chop it up at 7:40. Bobby, you ready to trade away some more Cowboy second rounders?
Let's do it. Let's get rid of all the second rounders. I don't need them anymore. So there is a rumor. There's chatter going on out there that Josh Sweat is unhappy with the Arizona Cardinals. Now, Josh Sweat was a guy who has been with Arizona now. I think it's just been a year, hasn't it? Where he ended up with Jonathan Gannon, and he was apparently a big Jonathan Gannon guy. And recently when they had their OTA practices and different things like that, he was not hurt, but he was absent, and the Cardinals were not giving much of an explanation. And one Cardinals reporter, Kyle Odegaard, had said, "Don't know the exact reason for the absence, but I've been hearing for a while that Josh Sweat is not particularly happy in Arizona." And then that was followed up with a report from Jenny Venerable of PHNX Sports saying that Josh Sweat has previously requested a trade after Gannon's firing. And then it was Jordan Schultz saying that teams have been calling in, checking, saying, "Hey, would he be available?" And I would be willing to go after Josh Sweat. I'm not willing to give up a first-round pick. He's not turning over that much capital.
He's 29 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He had a 74 PFF. And last year was his career high in sacks with 12. Before that, with filthy, 8, 6.5, 11, 7.5. and he plays 16 or 17 games.
Yeah, he's a guy who is definitely someone who can get after the passer and somebody who can generate pressure for you. Now, we've talked about this a little bit with Christian Parker and what he does, like how much of what his philosophy is dependent on just pinning your ears back and going and getting the quarterback, and how much is that cog missing in what they need. But I think that if you're talking about a second round pick, which is a pick that you hope is somewhere in the later part of the round, like in the second half of the round, and you're talking about the way that they've typically gambled with second round picks in the past and tried to, you know, oh, let's take a guy who's a little bit of a high risk, high reward guy, and then some of the, you know, brushback they've gotten from it, then I think it's worth it to just say, all right, let me get an established pass rusher, somebody to come in here and attack the quarterback and make everything else that I'm doing with the system, which is saying, let's confuse the quarterback. Fine, you can do all that, but also you can go after the passer if you've just got somebody like Josh Sweat who can consistently generate pressure. So for me, second round pick, go ahead and do it.
As the cock master here, the king of compensation,
you are.
Feels a tiny bit rich for me. I'm going to agree with Tolo Joseph and Chep, who are like, how about a third? I'm not doing it for a second. We could talk about a third round pick, because the Cowboys, they do need, in my opinion, more pass rush. A war daddy.
Wait. Before you did this compensation, had you done your YouTube?
Nope.
Well, you got to do your YouTube before you settle it. You may look at the YouTube and may want to give up a first. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at 8 years playing, and I see the sack numbers.
Yeah.
I see it in the Christian Parker, Vic Fangio system, and I've decided that's not second round worthy. I don't even have to look at the film that much. I'm that big cock master with the compensation.
Okay.
So, no, not for a second round pick. At 29, no.
29 third rounder, maybe. Yeah, because it'll be 30.
No, he just turned 29.
That's not that old, especially at that position. You know, other positions, they may age more poorly than others. Although, don't tell people on the internet that.
What's his money, by the way?
His average annual value right now is 20, or it's 19. But here in Dallas, after the trade, after everything gets cleared up cap-wise, because his cap number in Arizona would not be the same here in Dallas. After he got traded to Dallas, it would be about $11 million this year.
And under contract for how much longer?
I think 3 more years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Two or three more years.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not. Definitely not a two. Definitely not a two.
Yeah, he's under contract 26, 27, 28. And you can get out of the deal after 26. But if you gave up a second round pick, I would imagine you wouldn't want to.
Mark Schlereth, weekly guest on the G-Bag Nation, went on FS1 and throw him onto the Cowboys bandwagon because of this discussion up front.
One thing I will say about the Dallas Cowboys is you can win a lot of games in this league. You know, we all make it about receivers, which is the most overrated position in football.
Ooh.
Wide receiver is just ridiculous, ridiculously
guy.
Overrated. Where they have invested is a young offensive line that can hammer people, that can beat up on people. And now they've invested defensively in their front seven. They got D winners from San Francisco. They went out and got Quinnen Williams, who is an absolute beast from the Jets. Rashawn Gary is part of that. I think he was part of that trade with Michael Parsons. So, like, I don't know that they have a legit big time edge guy that's a, you know, kind of a war daddy off there on the edge. But man, they have invested in that front seven. You control both lines of scrimmage in the National Football League, you're going to win a lot of football games. And when I look at the Dallas Cowboys, that's what jumps out, just jumps off the screen to me more than George Pickens and more than, you know, hey, how are we going to, CeeDee Lamb, George Pickens, our talent out there. They've got plenty of talent, man. I just look at them and say, I think this is a football team that can dominate both lines of scrimmage. And that to me says, hey, man, Dallas Cowboys are front runners in my mind to win their division.
So, ooh. You know, when you're buying in on a team, is he saying like he's all in on them as a Super Bowl contender?
I mean, he just said they could dominate both sides of the line of scrimmage. That usually sounds like a team you think is a contender.
And easy favorites in the East. Look, I love Mark Schlereth probably more than anyone else in the building. I think he's off in terms of this offensive line trench domination. Where did they and how did they invest and build up so much more on the offensive line? Someone educate me. Why would I feel like they can bully anyone around right now with the questions at both tackles?
Does he still think Travis Frederick and Zach Martin are here.
Well, he thought that Rashawn Gary was involved in the Micah deal, right?
Yeah, that wasn't correct at all.
That's a Jerry Chess of moving. All right, this is Herschel Walker 2.0.
Hey,
yeah, he's involved, basically.
So the only thing that you can really say is a potential improvement, or that you go like, hey, that could be better, is just literally the time they've spent working together.
Yeah.
So, like, if Guyton's healthier this year, and if it's year three for Guyton and Guyton clicks, then yeah, okay. Like, I mean, it's not impossible to think there could be a step up for Guyton. It's not impossible to think there could be a step up for Booker and BB. You would just hope that Steele's issues last year, it wouldn't be about a step up. It'd be more about him getting back to where he was, and then Tyler Smith being healthy. Like, you'd be banking on all those things. But there's honestly, like, there's margins for all five of them to get better. Like, reasonably, but that's also a concern because that means that all five of them were potentially playing below where they could be.
There's his wide receiver take. Listen.
Hey, that's an old RJ Choppy.
That's
take.
A guard.
If you have Drew Brees or Peyton Manning or Tom Brady.
Well, Peyton Manning never went without.
No, he didn't, but ever. Then you could ask how much of those guys did he make? Right? You know, like.
Oh, I mean, he didn't. I don't think he made Marvin Harrison.
I don't think he made Marvin Harrison. I mean,
he
I
made Reggie Wayne.
I think somebody else in the witness lineup made Marvin Harrison.
But you don't need then you could say, all right, those guys can make a wide receiver. If you don't have an all-time great quarterback, you do need wide receivers. You do need to pay them. And there are guys like, you know,
Romo made wide receivers. Romo made LaRon Robinson, and he's not an all-time great.
No, but that's like. You know, he was at the top of the, you know, kind of near the top of the league. You know, he was a top 6-7, you know, quarterback in the league, or close to it. So, like, if you have a upper echelon quarterback, sure. But Patrick Mahomes showed this year that you kind of do need him.
I just think Schlereth on this one seems a little bit off. And I normally don't say that about his takes. And I know he comes on, spits some fire, some anti-Cowboy fire on G-Bag. But this one, I'm like, you need to go back over. There's a reason, you know, Greg Olson won that analyst Emmy over everyone else.
It's easier to like, listen and go like, okay, maybe he knows something I don't. If he hadn't also just said a couple things that were just factually incorrect about the team, where it's like, you know, Rashawn Gary, he was in that Micah trade, and then, yeah, you know, the offensive line dominant. It's like, well, that's not right.
I was stunned that Bobby Bell just threw out that Romo comment, but I should have known. Again, with these guys, I'm the only one that's, you know, 100% just no agendas. What you get from me is pure. It's that pure cut cocaine. You guys are always lacing it.
Oh, yeah, I'm laced.
You're cutting it with
my
something.
Coke is
baking soda, usually.
You're cutting it with something, and it just clicked in my head why Bobby gave Romo the compliment.
No, it had nothing to do with it. It legitimately, whenever I think of here in Dallas, a quarterback helping get a receiver paid, I always think of Romo and LaRon Robinson. It's the default. Well, OCU Mignora. From the Giants.
Nominating him for Friday at 9?
No, awarding him already. It's done. He's won worst take of the week. And this is for anybody who even loves Romo. Although, I don't know, the fan text, there are some who really, really love him. Somebody may say, no, he's 100% right here. OCU Mignora was talking to RJ Ochoa from Blogging the Boys. And RJ was just like, hey, I'm curious. There's always a lot of different split opinion on Tony Romo, somebody who played against him for several years. What do you think about Tony Romo? And OCU Mignora gave the most glowing endorsement of anyone about Tony Romo, even probably family members.
This is going to come as a surprise to you and as a surprise to many people. Tony Romo was the most difficult quarterback we ever faced. He was number one. I rate Romo as the best quarterback we ever played against. And we played against some incredible ones. We played against the GOAT, Tom Brady, the greatest of all time. Played against Peyton Manning. But for me personally, my level of respect for Tony Romo, having faced him year in and year out, such an underrated football player. People don't understand the type of headache he was as a player. And they don't give him enough credit, man. If he would have won the Super Bowl, which he should have, I think things would have been different.
Jeez.
But without a shadow of a doubt, one of the all-time great NFL quarterbacks, man. And they need to put a lot more respect on that man's name.
What?
How much did he pay for that?
Where are the breadcrumbs here?
Does he live here? First he goes, most difficult. And then he goes, wait, I got to clarify.
Yeah.
The greatest.
If he would have just stopped at difficult and headache, I could have maybe spun it.
And if he would have won the Super Bowl, which he should have.
I could have better called Chopped it and said, all right, running around and, you know,
a difficult matchup.
A difficult matchup.
He could
catch a fumble and run it 40 yards. My goodness, this is gonna be tough
better
to
than
top.
Brady, better than Manning.
The only
all time great. One.
The only connection he has is DeMarcus Ware. That they were teammates in college.
And you think you can get DeMarcus Ware to say Romo is better than Peyton?
Probably not.
No. This is
Lord.
So I can explain the Brady thing. That is a Giants player going like, he wasn't that bad.
Right.
We beat him. We didn't think he was that great. Like, that's them. The Peyton one is, is that Eli endorsement? You know, Peyton's not even that great. Eli is just as good as a Peyton. But there's something that, for him to go like, then to add on the end of this, if he would have won a Super Bowl, which he should have, like he was cheated out of a Super
Bowl. So close.
I was like, where did this come from? It's like he'd been waiting for somebody to just ask him for years, like, please God, someone ask me how great Romo is so I can tell them.
Throw me this sop on a tee.
280 retweets.
He is a criminally underrated quarterback.
Criminally.
Yes, he is.
He was very good.
He was very, very good, and he did not get enough of the credit during his playing days for how good he was, and history will probably not remember how good of a player he was. He was a genuinely, like, top, probably...
All the R's were really good.
I can't remember everybody that was in each sort of section, but I would say he was generally like a top 6 to 8 quarterback generally when he was playing. And he's not going to be remembered like that, but that's... That's going a little over the top.
That's strong.
Yeah, that's a little too heavy on the glazing.
Let's take it from Romo to Aikman before we hook you up with Luke Bryan tickets and chop it up.
Yeah, we've all talked about the nature that everybody's been so upset by Troy Aikman working with the Dolphins and not doing things with the Cowboys. And he even said, I would have loved to roll with the Cowboys at one point, kind of doing this sort of thing. But, you know, that's passed a little bit. Well, Michael Irvin was on with DLLS yesterday, and he was just lamenting, sick to his stomach, about Troy Aikman working with the Dolphins.
Troy Aikman was the main part of it, and it does pain me to see that. I mean, I think it's criminal for any club not to try to just glean as much as you can from a guy like Troy Aikman, whose job is to go and talk to teams, talk to coaches, and bring an understanding of what's going on behind the scenes to the world. So he understands each thing that's going on in your organization. I mean, there is no better place of information than to get from a guy like Troy. And Tom Brady's smart enough to be doing that and have part ownership into a team. I think that's a hell of an advantage for Tom Brady. You know what I mean? Sooner or later, he has to get it right. So yeah, absolutely, that hurts me. It pains me to see that happen. Because I know Troy wanted to do that. Troy wanted a John Elway situation here in Dallas. And I know he wanted it, and certainly he earned it. But it's not going to happen.
Why won't anybody?
What's wrong with that audio? Yeah.
I don't know. It's the clip they posted. Why won't anybody just say directly why they have issues? Like, there's clearly just tension that exists between Jerry and Troy.
Yeah,
and they don't
want to
say it. They don't want to. Well, I mean, no, they will air dirty laundry. they have no problem talking about Micah and things like that. But
not when it comes to Jerry.
But that's
no. Troy will sideswipe a little bit.
Troy won't. But then they won't ever just. And I kind of want to ask him whether probably Oxnard's the place for it. So this may be a G-bag thing. I'm gonna have to sick Dawson on them again. Where somebody like I want somebody to just ask Jerry like, hey, look, he ended up with the Dolphins instead of here. It seems like there's always some sort of like heavy-handed criticism that can come your way from it. Like, do you guys have an issue? Like, because I don't know if he's just been asked directly, is there a problem?
Troy Aikman does not respect Jerry Jones' level and love for winning. He doesn't. If you're not all about it, 1-2-3 winning W's. Troutman doesn't ultimately respect it 100%. I get that.
Do you think he's just never forgiven him for Jimmy?
I think he would forgive him, yeah, but like,
do you think he has? Maybe
I think he has. I'm gonna guess. This is okay. All guessing. I don't know anything. I think he has probably forgiven him, but Troy is not a great BSer, right, in my opinion. And for 30 years, he has to be asked why the Cowboys aren't around it. And I think to the best, Troy tiptoeing is like in heels. He can't do it. Troy tiptoes in heels. And he's a brutally honest, blunt dude, and he believes and he has known that winning the championship, if you walk by the Cowboys whiteboard, may not have been sitting there, really, in reality, number one for 30 years.
Yeah, I think Troy feels like...
I just think it's a respect thing for winning.
Yeah, I wonder if Troy feels like he was most impacted legacy-wise by the Jimmy thing. Because if they, you know, quarterbacks...
Yeah.
You know, if he gets a fourth.
Because Emmitt wasn't.
You know, took Michael a little bit to get in the Hall of Fame, but how much of that was.
Yeah, if they went in 94, you're probably never again seeing a team win four straight titles. And it hadn't happened in the Super Bowl era.
And Aikman's placement is never amongst the top.
Never close.
Top.
There, you cannot find a person outside of DFW that puts him in the top 10.
Mike Fisher.
Outside of DFW.
I almost had to beat Mike's ass arguing Aikman and Marino once.
But nobody puts him in the top 10 outside of DFW. And if he wins his fourth Super Bowl, just about everybody will put him in the top 10.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't with Bradshaw.
No, they didn't.
But four in a row is different.
Four in a row is different, and there was no – there was a good defense. It wasn't the Steel Curtain, you know?
Yeah.
So – it just puts you in a different stratosphere. I think he was impacted most legacy-wise, and it just offends him. It bothers him.
And I don't know. I guess Jerry just feels that because I think it's reciprocated tension. I don't think it's just one side. And Jerry's like, why won't he? I think Jerry has frustrations.
Well, Troy doesn't look. Let's be real about it. All right, and we love Michael. Michael will be a little critical in his own way. He's laughing while being critical when he criticizes the Cowboys. He'll really go after the players in the locker room. But Deion Sanders kisses Jerry Jones's ass. And Michael Irvin would probably be second in that. Every time we see Emmitt Smith, well, I tell him, I love how honest you're being. Moose will be kind of blunt.
Oh, yeah.
And a little bit critical. But Emmitt is probably the most critical, and then Aikman. And that's the divide of Cowboy legends, right? Mm-hmm. Deion won't say anything about Jerry. Michael is right behind him. And then on the other side, Emmitt will destroy them. Not necessarily Jerry, but, you know, Troy will question their commitment to winning. And I think that's the divide. That's what I think.
Yeah, and I think that's... Maybe it is just he doesn't pull punches because he's that serious about winning. But that's the thing. It does make me wonder, like, I think all those guys, like Michael was very serious about winning.
Yeah.
And other guys were very. Yeah. So it makes me wonder, is it deeper than just you weren't
like
committed
Michael,
to winning?
Though, like, feels like he owes Jerry a lot more than Troy would ever feel like he owes Jerry. I don't think Troy thinks he owes Jerry anything. And Michael may feel a little bit indebted to him.
I think if you privately talk to Jerry and Troy about it, I think they could probably pinpoint like there was an instance where it just was like, oh, this has shifted now. It's too awkwardly unsaid and tense.
At Vistaprint, we know you've got that idea for your business, like the one that nails the trade show, levels up your brand, or makes your team say,
we're really doing this.
But an idea is just an idea until it's printed on
signage, giveaways, custom apparel.
Once it's
in my hands, on my team, out in the world,
then it's happening.
It's so happening.
Vistaprint has thousands of products, easy design tools, and real support to turn that idea into something possible. Print your possible with code NEW20 for 20% off your first order at Vistaprint.com.
Summer routines live or die by how easy they are. And honestly, if something takes too much effort, I'm out. That's why Grunes is my go-to. It's one daily pack of gummies covering my greens, vitamins, and minerals. Plus, it has 6 grams of prebiotic fiber, which is more than 2 cups of broccoli. No mixing powders, no giant pills, no hassle. Just rip open the pack and I'm done. They taste good and it makes it easy to stay on top of my health, even when life gets busy. Save up to 52% off with code PODCAST at Grunes.co. That's code PODCAST at Grunes.co.
What is Toyota affordability? It all starts with buying smart. And your Toyota dealer has great deals available to qualified customers on reliable cars and SUVs, including the redesigned RAV4, spacious Grand Highlander, sporty Camrys, and Corollas. It means driving for less with efficient hybrid and plug-in hybrid options available throughout the lineup, extending your overall driving range and delivering great MPGs, saving you money at the pump. And it means trading for more. Toyota is known for building long-lasting vehicles. And as the best resale value brand, according to Kelley Blue Book, your Toyota can be worth thousands more than average when it's time to trade in. That's Toyota affordability. Buy smart, drive for less, and trade for more. Shop Toyota.com or your local dealer for deals and details. Vehicles projected resale value is specific to the 2026 model year. For more information, visit KellyBlueBooksKBB.com. Toyota brand average resale value is 53% versus the average vehicle at 45%. Toyota, let's go places.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? Maintain X is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With Maintain X, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try MaintainX for free today. Go to MaintainX.com/AI. That's Maintain and the letter X.com/AI.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Let's talk some Dallas Cowboys. I specifically want to focus on the special teams to start, if you do not mind. So we've talked all about the defense. Defense was horrid last year, just the worst. And so the Cowboys have focused a lot of time, efforts, assets in making sure that the defense is better. But at the same point, your special teams seemed really bad, despite the fact that the kicking part, or the people who kick the ball for you, are really good. You have a tremendous kicker, place kicker. You have, I think, a very good punter as well. Yet,
you've been adamant about him being the Cowboys punter since he was a Ram.
For sure. And so the Cowboys still in Sports Illustrated's rankings last year were 27th in special teams.
Okay.
Because of a lot of it had to do with the coverage and then to a certain extent the kick return, which that is kind of a fascinating discussion in and of itself. But with a really good place kicker and a good punter, you are still really low on the overall special teams unit, which I think tells you everything that you need to know about everything else involved in special teams, including your coverage units. So is there any concern from either of y'all about, while we've talked about all of this, special teams shot you in the foot many times last year?
Yeah, it did seem like we were constantly discussing. And Kevin, I know you said a discussion in of itself. I do have some numbers on kick returns.
Tell me.
That I wanted to throw out there.
That are a little weird.
Yeah, this is weird. So 20-plus yard kick returns, the Cowboys had 72 last year. 20-plus yard kick returns, that was the second most.
Okay.
All right.
Which feels great.
That's the most. That's the most by two.
Okay.
Is what I meant to say. Bengals and Cardinals both had 70. That's a lot of kick returns at 20-plus yards.
Yep.
40-plus yards, you were middle of the pack last year.
Okay.
So you could get to a certain number. And I think, if I remember correctly, Kevin, the number like capped you at 28 yards, 29 yards. You didn't get much more than 29 yards. So you were pretty much starting no further than your 30-yard line every time. Matter of fact, the number of 40-plus yard kick returns, 3.
Okay.
So you got to 40. You got big plays like that. The longest one was 84. That's cool. But you didn't get beyond that very often. So your average starting position is around the 29-yard line, 30-yard line, which is basically what's the point?
Which you would think if you had that many like effective run backs that you would be at the front of the pack.
Yeah. So that was kind of an alarming, like, okay, how do you get to the next level of that? How do you break those open? How do you become more than just that? But on the other side too, that wasn't like, it felt like the opponent oftentimes had better places to start from.
Yes.
And while starting at the 30-yard line isn't the world's end, because hell, it used to be the 20, and you'd have to drive from there, you would certainly love more opportunities with who everybody says is one of the premier kick returners in the league to crack one open for a big play.
And that's the thing about it on both sides of the ball, right? While our offense as a whole was really good last year, there were times when they stalled out in really clutch drives. And you would like to know that, like, hey, you can just get a leg up, whether it's kick return or punt return in that instance. And then, while I know a lot of folks are really jazzed up about the defense, and I think they look better and they put a lot into it and everything like that, you don't want to start them off. Like, the defense was bad last year, make no mistake about it. But I also felt like they got continually started off in disadvantageous situations. And you're like, our defense is not good enough to handle an average starting spot, let alone a below average starting spot for them. And so I think that's my concern.
The return average against the Cowboys was 25-7.
Okay.
So that was the average there.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they were at the average.
You're right. In middle of the pack, and you just said our defense isn't good enough to be middle of the pack in special teams.
Exactly. So while you look on paper like you have improved your defense, if you haven't improved your special teams on either side, is that already going to put you in a potentially detrimental situation where your defense could be better, but it won't improve as much as you would have hoped because your special teams didn't pick up on that side of the ball? It just feels like time and again that when you watched it, you couldn't get off of blocks, off of coverage, and you couldn't tackle. And on the return side of it, how often did you not even need to see the flag to know that there was a flag coming because the Cowboys had broken open a return? You're like, I don't know if it's block in the back or whatever the case is, but I know there's a flag. It always feels like it's a block in the back or holding. And sometimes I hate that we even return the ball because I was like, you know you're going to get a freaking penalty. But there were some runs that I was like, I already know there's a flag, even if I haven't seen it yet, because there's no way we opened up that space legally.
Now, so this is where I'd like to involve this part of the question from the 443. Turpin lost focus. Being involved in the offense last year needs to solely focus on special teams. And you did. I have a tendency to believe sometimes guys get to a place and they're like, I'm a receiver now.
Right.
But I think his best asset was the hunger that came from being a kick returner that was like, I gotta go make something of myself out here. But again, the blocking has a big factor in that. The blocking absolutely does. Do you think that being a gadget offense guy has an effect on what he does as a returner, and that Flannoy needs to be the third, and that they can come up with other ways to create offense without having him as a receiver?
You already forgetting about Valdez-Scantling?
I absolutely have.
Okay, me too.
Yeah.
So I think...
Alec, how are you feeling about that?
I will never forget that MVS is on this team.
Okay.
Dang it.
And you're expecting him to do really great, big things.
Better than Jonathan Mingo.
Okay! That's a fair point,
He's gonna have his breakout game this year.
I want everyone to be honest right now. Be honest and text in. 877-881-1053. Frankel, injury attorney text line. Did you forget that Jonathan Mingo was still on this team? I want you to be honest. You could still be the biggest Cowboys super fan, but you kind of forgot that he was on this team. I just want everyone to be honest. But that is an interesting hypothesis. We talked to Mickey about that last year, and he disagreed. But frequently, we do not necessarily have to agree with Mickey Spagnuolo. And I think...
Which I think is a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he does as well. I think I do agree with that contention, because you were talking about it. Like, he became the highest paid returner. But then... It's become just run of the mill for a receiver to get paid $28 to $32 million. So you can't help but let your mind wander about, like, hey, what if I get a $20 million bump per year? Like, I'm not saying he would be that guy.
Right, right.
But, like, you can't help but kind of think about that.
Kevin, the Cowboys look at that as a true value, right?
I'm sure. Double position.
You are the highest paid returner out there in the market.
Right.
There's nobody paid as much as you. You are a regular paid receiver. To them, they're like, look at how much we're not spending on this, because now we can go spending on Pickens and CeeDee Lamb, obviously, because they would do that in a heartbeat, right? Without a doubt. But yeah, I'm kind of curious on what if you're getting that max level dude still, or if he's just a threat. And if he's a threat, at some point, the threat has to do that thing.
Yeah.
Go back to the stars. If Miro's going to be a threat from the point, he needs to be one of those dudes that actually takes shots from there.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the threat is non-existent. So, but the blocking part of it, the tackling, you brought the tackling part up too. And this is, I saw this recently, and I'm kind of curious on your front. We discussed this a little bit, but Leafau needs to become the next dude that leads the special teams, correct? Like, he needs to be a playmaker.
Yeah.
He needs to be a playmaker on that side, because what is the point of his roster spot if he's not an elite defensive player, but he's very good? You can go be a Bill Bates. You can go be one of those guys that makes your name as a, he gets great tackles and makes big plays on special teams.
Is that oddly similar to Turpin in terms of...
Just other side of the ball?
Yeah, yes, yeah. Exactly. In terms of, but no, I thought you guys were going to start working me some at outside linebacker. And you're like, right. But special teams is your gateway.
This is your way.
Yeah, like you don't, we're not going to say, hey, it hasn't really worked, but now we're going to give it another shot without saying, hey, have you proven your worth in other places? And I know that sucks sometimes, but that's the way it is.
And if you're like, and if you're, this is the great thing about the NFL, is that if you're like, well, you know what? I've had enough of this team specifically, and I don't want that from this team, then go out there and be that ace. And show another team that you might want to play for that you're going to be that guy for them. And then maybe they'll give you those opportunities that you think you deserve elsewhere. Because I know CJ Goodwin has been that guy for the Cowboys. They're just like, that's our dude.
Not anymore.
Yeah. So somebody in this area needs to be like, this is where I'm going to make my mark on this team. And this is I think this is that opportunity for him for sure.
From the 214, yes, I did forget that Jonathan Mingo was on this team. From the 214 and another 214, Mingo who?
Okay.
From the 972, Jonathan who?
Y'all just wait until he has his breakout game.
Alex going to hate this. Oh, we'll get to that. The 817, that was not on my Mingo card. Hashtag dinosaurs. So they're really locked in. How can I forget? Because we wasted a fourth round pick. And then from the 817, I can't forget because I have a Mingo jersey. And then from the 972... The only reason I haven't forgotten about Jonathan Mingo is you guys are always talking about him having his breakout game. Now, I would love to take credit for that. That is somebody,
a texter,
who texts in every time we do Cowboys win because Cowboys lose because, and they always say, I think it's Mingo has his breakout game with four catches for 26 yards. And like, it just feels like it is openly mocking his production. And I think it's funny. And that person always jumps in. And then from the 214, this is the year that Jonathan Mingo puts it all together. If that's not because of injury, your offense is going to be unstoppable. If Jonathan Mingo puts it together and you still have your other collection of pass catchers, good luck, everybody.
I want to know what that looks like real quick, Kevin.
5 for 70 per game.
Five for 70 per game.
That'd be a heck of a season.
His best season. His rookie year.
Okay.
43 catches on 85 targets. 418 yards. 15 first downs, zero touchdowns. He has zero touchdowns in his career. At this point, he has the same amount as Jesse Holly.
Damn. He's so close.
He was so close to getting that touchdown, though.
I believe by the metrics that I just threw out for you, that would be 85 catches for 1,190 yards. So maybe scale that down just just a little bit. Because, like, 5 for 70 doesn't sound crazy. Mm-hmm. But if you extrapolated it out, so that's what it would be.
If he could have a 600-yard season, I'd be pretty okay with that.
And three touchdowns.
That'd be awesome, dude.
Yeah, buddy, welcome back. It's the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Segment's brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car or truck wreck, call the Frankels first, 214 or 817-333-3333. There's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. The Frankels are the go-to car and truck wreck attorney in Dallas. Okay. Here we go. We got the C-note, and I teased five ways the Cowboys offense could be better in 2026. Which one of these do you believe in? Give me a scale of like 1 to 5. 1 being the lowest belief, 5 being the strongest belief on how likely you think these things will happen. Joseph Hoyt, Morning News, with the article. Number 1, turnover ratio. They were 21-12 the wrong way. Kobe Durant, 7 turnovers in his 4-year career, 7 takeaways, I guess you would say. And Jalen Thompson has 9 in his 7-year career. Last year, it really hit the fan with their inability to even break up passes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm surprised they even had 12 takeaways at the end of the year. Must have picked up a lot of fumbles. What do you think? Can turnover ratio flip on its head and go 21-12 the right way? It is pretty fickle. It's unpredictable.
It certainly can. We've seen that happen, too, with the Cowboys at times. In like the 2014 season, they flipped from 13-14. I think that might have been Marinelli's first year with the team. And they went crazy. That was a big reason why the defense wasn't even that good. But they were very opportunistic when it came to getting turnovers. I think that with a new defensive coordinator, and especially now a scheme that's going to try and limit the big play, just having better talent on the field and players like a Kobe Durant or a Caleb Downs, adding a D. Winters who's a better linebacker than what they had. Yeah, I don't know that it'll be as drastic as 25-12, but I do think that's an area that should improve defensively. They should be better than they were last year. I think across the board, any defensive category or stat you want to throw out, that should improve. You can't really be much worse.
On a scale of 1 to 5, I'd probably say I'm right in the middle.
Like 3.
I'll put that as a 3.
Yeah, that's fair.
Kind of hoping for the best. I don't think they have players that are going to guarantee it happens. And I probably wouldn't bet on them to be the top half of the league in turnover differential because of that. But hell, if Ezeraku takes off and Lawrence takes off and, you know, D. Winters can be in position. I think D. only has 1 pick in his 4 seasons. Might not be his specialty, but he is a genius at being in position. Number 2, finding a second running back.
That's a must.
Yeah. Is this going to happen internally? Do you believe in Davis or Blue or Maffa? Or is this something you're really hoping that they take care of?
They appear to believe that they're going to ride with this. If I do feel like that there's going to be a post-June 1 trade signing, I think it's going to be another defensive player. I think they're going to ride with these running backs and see what they got.
And I would put that as a 2 out of 5. If you're saying we're going to ride with these running backs and find a guy that can take pressure off of Javonte Williams, I don't think you're going to be successful. Malik Davis will be somewhat solid.
Yeah, so I believe in Phil Maffa. I really do. He's my guy that I think if you were to lose Javonte Williams, I think he steps up in that role. I think he gives you a lot of similarities that Javonte Williams has in terms of their running style. Now, he's not the answer to more explosive plays because he's also not a burner. But I think he's a guy that is a good in-between-the-tackles runner. I think he's got good vision. I think he's got good contact balance. I was really impressed with what we saw from him in training camp and preseason, and I think they like him. I think he's going to carry over. And if God forbid something happened to Williams, my bet would be Phil Maffa steps up for you.
I just don't see the cutting from Phil Maffa. Do you? I think he's a one bruiser. Cut. One, yeah, cut, one cut. One cut bruiser.
Yeah, just kind of hand me the ball and one cut. The question is going to be, with the offense, are there any changes of how there's going to be with blitz pickups and things like that? You know, and how can we tell that in training camp? I mean, are we going to be able to see any one-on-ones where, wow, there looks like to me they're trying to kind of blitz here and they're going to, you know, here's a pickup and, you know, you're going to see, I mean, you see guys work on the pickup, but that could determine whether a guy plays or not.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden we're in training camp those days and, wow, man, Moffitt just missed that one, or Blue missed that one, or, wow, look at the good one Williams had on that one.
Yeah.
That's, I think that you could kind of get a little bit of an idea of what they think about these guys when it comes to, you know, because they're not going to play if you can't pick up blitzes, regardless if you can carry the ball or not.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of it, though, as we go through this, is going to come back to the decisions the coaches make. You know, and Clayton Adams had some great media last week in that interview with Ian Rappaport and was it Judy on the NFL Network?
Batista.
Talking about how do we evolve this thing and, you know, make it better. And, you know, there's opportunity out there to, I feel like, get George Pickens and CeeDee Lamb just a little bit more involved than they were at times last year. You know, but beyond that, I don't know what the opportunity is. Maybe moving Tyler Smith to left tackle. Let's go to number three in Joseph Hoyt's article. Red zone efficiency. They got into the red zone last year at the fifth highest rate in the league. They converted at the 16th highest rated, and it was 14% below the league leading Eagles, who converted at 70%. The Cowboys were at 56. It's been an issue for a lot of Dak's career, hasn't it? And
is your best player converting in the red zone Williams? Just handing him the ball, was that the best?
Probably. I mean, you would like to think that.
I'm just saying, was it?
I don't know if it was.
No, I think that was part of the reason why they struggled in the red zone is because they didn't.
I thought Williams
had
like 9 or 10 touchdowns.
He did. But I don't know how many red zone touchdowns he had. I think I can do a quick search on that.
Yeah, I'll try to pull it up.
Kind of
assume as well.
I kind of assumed that he was just that most of his touchdowns were. I don't remember
near the
anything.
Goal line.
Anything?
Yeah,
near.
No. Most of his touchdowns are from close to the goal line.
Do they have a really good red zone player?
I mean, you should with Pickens and Lamb. You should have two really good ones. I mean, Ferguson. That was, I think, the one area where because he ended up with like. He had 8 touchdowns last year.
I remember in OTAs.
Javonte dominated it. He had 12.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I remember last year watching OTA practices, and I was thinking, okay, how are they going to use Pickens and how are they going to use Lamb? And Lamb was kind of slot inside routes down on the goal line, and Pickens was back, you know, back in the corner and along the back line is mm-hmm. where, you know, is where. And I just never felt like that they. Now we how many days have we always seen the Cowboys with a Dez Bryant or a Jason Witten or, you know, something that you knew like that you could get way back in the day, Emmitt Smith, but that was a totally different team.
But yeah, just a guaranteed
but
player.
But just a guaranteed, when you got down the red zone, you were going to find a way to score with this guy. But it seemed like the closer they got to the goal line, the harder it was for them to score.
Yeah, because I mean, and I think that the offensive line plays a factor into that too. Mm-hmm. I mean, you want to be able to run the football when you get inside the 10. And clearly, Javonte Williams is a back that has a nose for the end zone. But I think the offensive line, maybe some failing. And then also you get a holding call. Yeah. I think that was a big problem, was penalties in the red zone. Because now you're set up. It's first down and goal from the 2. Here's a holding call. Now it's second down and goal from the 12. Those were problems. But, I mean, I think you could move red zone efficiency up to number 1. But I think you're right. That seems like that is a topic of conversation every year, that things will bog down in the red zone. And really a player that would be, I think his best attribute to help this team, if he makes the roster, would be Michael Trigg from Baylor. I think that would be his best skill set, is being able to put himself body, box out, basketball style, throw the ball up, let him high point the football and go and get it. That's what he did so well at Baylor. I think he's a guy that could really show out in the red zone.
Pickens had 4 in the red zone last year, and CeeDee Lamb had 2. But yeah, this is another thing that comes back to Clayton Adams. Like, how can you scheme things open? Because as much as I will stand for Dak, I love him. When the field gets more condensed, his shortcomings, his vision, his ball placement, it becomes magnified.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why really they've only been good when they've had a dominant running game, whether that was Zeke or Tony Pollard throughout Dak's career.
Yeah, I mean, so much of it, like, why are the Eagles best in the league in the red zone? They were able to run the football there,
mm-hmm.
you know? And the Bills were number 2. And a lot of that is probably Josh Allen being able to run as well. I think that's a nice area for your quarterback to be able to take advantage of his legs. Dak doesn't really have that anymore. So a lot of it, I think, is going to be on the offensive line being able to run the football and push people around. And then, as you said, Clayton Adams, your play calling, your design, how can you scheme guys open in a way that can pay off to where you're not settling for so many gosh dang field goals.
Be good at left tackle, Guyton or Thomas or Shelton. I would throw in Tyler Smith.
Yep.
And I don't know. I guess one out of five, I'd say that's a two or a three. Maybe a 2.5. I believe they're going to be better at left tackle significantly than they were in 2025. Can hope for the best, but also prepare for the worst. And then five, throwing deeper to Ferguson. Was this a scheme adjustment, you think?
That's what I was wondering. I was wondering that most of the season. Like, why is Ferguson's number so low where he's a high-volume player, but he's, like, 7 yards a pop or something? Like, that needs to be – did he lose the athleticism and the ability to get down the field? Or did they just decide, hey, we have Lamb and Pickens, and so Ferguson, you're going to be just kind of an outlet dump-off guy? I felt like so many of his receptions were, like, at the line of scrimmage after nobody was open or whatever. Boom, we'll just dump it down to Ferguson. So that's something I'm wondering. Has Ferguson lost it, or was that just – a product of the way Shoddy and Adams wanted to use him?
You remember last year when he joined us for week one and said he'd lost weight and he was trying to get quicker?
Mm-hmm.
It would make sense that the coaches went to him and be like, hey, we're going to throw short to you and we're looking for more yak this year. Mm-hmm. You know, could you lose some weight? Could you get in the best shape of your life here? You're still young enough that you could be more dynamic. And maybe they found out that he's just not athletic enough, that even losing 10, 15 pounds isn't going to make him faster, elusive. You know, yeah. So if you're going to use Ferguson, you got to throw it to him.
And I remember they just didn't hit on some of those seam routes that we were so accustomed, whether it was drops or teams started to try and take that away as well. I think that they know that that's a product that Dak likes to do. He likes to throw that seam to the tight end, and they were trying to eliminate that a little bit. It worked. I think they hit a big one. I want to say it was against the Jets, possibly. I think there was an episode where Brian actually asked Jake about that. Like, at the snap, you could see, like, this is where it's going to go. He knew he got the right coverage for it. But I think kind of getting that bread and butter play back would also help Jake Ferguson in that regard.
I mean, Span Ford's a hell of a blocker. I don't think he's going to make a big jump for you and become that vertical threat. And obviously, Schoonmaker's not
going
to.
That's where Enter Michael Trigg. I mean, I think that's where he could really help this offense.
Is that the undrafted guy you think that could have like a Cole Beasley type of quick ascent into the offense?
I do. I think that they really like him a lot. I think him and Linda Wells are doing a lot of work together. And, I mean, he is a really, really talented player. It's just, you know, the mentals, all that stuff. He's got to put it together. And he does need to be a willing blocker. That definitely did not show up on tape.
At Vistaprint, we know you've got that idea for your business. Like the one that nails the trade show, levels up your brand, or makes your team say,
we're really doing this.
But an idea is just an idea until it's printed on
signage, giveaways, custom apparel.
Once it's
in my hands, on my team, out in the world.
Then it's happening.
It's so happening.
Vistaprint has thousands of products, easy design tools, and real support to turn that idea into something possible. Print your possible with code NEW20 for 20% off your first order at Vistaprint.com.
The days are longer, the calendar's filling up, and I want to feel as good as this beautiful summer weather. That's why I've been loving Grooms. It's one daily pack of gummies that covers my greens, vitamins, minerals, and even has 6 grams of prebiotic fiber. So I don't need to juggle a complicated wellness routine on top of everything else. They taste amazing. They're easy to toss in my bag on the go. Plus, they're vegan, gluten-free, and HSA FSA eligible for reimbursement. Save up to 52% off with code podcast at Grooms.co. That's code podcast at GRUNS.CO.
What is Toyota affordability? It's buying smart. Right now, your local Toyota dealer has great deals available on some of the most reliable trucks on the market, like the off-road ready Tacoma, rugged full-size Tundra, and the legendary 4Runner, each with the space, tech, and features to handle it all, from the worksite to the trails. It means driving for less with efficient hybrid options available, extending your overall driving range, and delivering great MPGs, meaning bigger savings at the pump without sacrificing power. And it means trading for more. The Tacoma and Tundra are ranked #1 and #2 in resale value over all vehicles according to Kelley Blue Book, which can mean thousands more than average when it's time to trade in. That's Toyota affordability. Buy smart, drive for less, and trade for more. Shop Toyota.com or your local dealer for deals and details. Vehicles projected resale value is specific to the 2026 model year. For more information, visit Kelley Blue Book's KBB.com. Toyota brand average resale value is 53% versus the average vehicle at 45%. Toyota, let's go places.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? Maintain X is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With Maintain X, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less. Try MaintainX for free today. Go to MaintainX.com/AI. That's Maintain and the letter X.com/AI.
I'm Serena Williams, and I'm healthier on Row. I've lost 34 pounds in a year with GLP-1s, diet, and exercise. On Row, you can access GLP-1 options, including the first FDA-approved GLP-1 pill for weight loss. Go to row.co/journey to see if you qualify. 14 to 20% average weight loss in 1 year in non-diabetics with obesity or overweight with a weight-related medical condition versus 2.2% to 3.1% in placebo arm. Rx only. To stay informed about serious side effects, go to row.co/safety.
We are commercial free. We're going to hook you up with Luke Bryan tickets for being part of this show as we head into the weekend. Another Luke Bryan ticket giveaway in the 9 o'clock hour. Sean Sharif, Cowboys insider Bobby Bell. Choppy is out sick today. We got Peyton and Aiden running the Odyssey app, the fan cam, Twitch, and YouTube. And it's time for a Cowboy mailbag.
Yep, we're going to open up the mailbag a little bit. We are in the middle of a little bit of a lull in Cowboys action. So now's a good time to attack some of the broader questions that you may have. You can text them in 877-881-1053, 877-881-1053. But I'd also put out four questions on Twitter, and we got a number of questions sent in. And the first one here is from Takes by Tyval, I think it is, T-Y-V-A-L. He said, the Cowboys led the league in penalties in 2025. How is Brian Schottenheimer going to address this in year two? Which I was trying to think back about it. I remember
they led in penalties.
They had so many problems last year that's the thing. I had to go look. I mean, I was sure that was correct just because, I mean, like the fact that he said they led, it's like, okay, well, I'm sure you looked it up. And so I went and had to look. And
I mean, I know they usually lead in penalties. I just didn't realize they did it again.
Well, and I remember there was a time during the middle of the year where we had talked about that the penalties were becoming an issue again. Because early on in the year, I think they were, like, first game against Philly, they had, like, four. And we were like, oh, okay, they've kind of cleaned some of this up. They look disciplined. And then I remember it becoming a bigger problem as it went along. Did not remember them leading the league in penalties. So here's what I would say, and this is probably something that I don't know if the Cowboys would ever say this on the record, but I think there would be people that would tell you this away from a microphone.
Here it is. Dallas 133, Tennessee 130, the Giants 128 with Jacksonville.
Yeah, and that's, so you've got Jacksonville that was 130, you've got Denver that was 129, Houston that was 128, Philly was a little bit behind that. A couple years ago, I mean, Baltimore used to routinely lead the NFL in penalties. Penalties is not necessarily the problem. Like I think a lot of people would say, when you start coaching penalties aggressively, you're coaching out a lot of aggression at times that you don't want to totally tamp down. The problem is, which penalties are you leading the league in? So, for instance, one of the things that's really bad is pre-snap penalties. That's what you don't want, which is where the Cowboys are higher up on the list. And when you look at who are the worst teams in the NFL with pre-snap penalties last year, okay, it was the Giants, it was the Titans, it was the Saints. When you look at the teams that were the best with pre-snap penalties, San Francisco, the Rams, the Bills, the Colts, the Patriots, the Seahawks, that's a disciplined football team. You'll take some of the other penalties that come your way. Roughing the passer penalty sucks. It's 15 yards. But a lot of times you don't want to coach out of a player like, yeah, hey, pull back on the aggression.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to get some guys that if they're playing physically at times, you'll get holding calls and different things like that. The ones that are just inexcusable are, we're not even like in the middle of action and you're setting us back another 5 yards before we can even snap the ball. That's,
yeah,
a problem. So in terms of cleaning those up, I think what's going to be bigger there, a lot of times it's on offense with the pre-snap penalties, it's going to be about the communication angle. With the offensive line in particular, it's going to be about how frequently have they played with each other, because a lot of the being able to gel as a unit, lot of times we get offensive line penalties, pre-snap or otherwise, whenever there's just somebody new comes in the game, and then there's immediately a false start, or somebody new is in the game and they don't know the cadence, and there are all these different things that can occur there, different things of players who are motioning and then not lining back up correctly. So a lot of times that's just about swapping players in. So I think for them it'd probably be about finding stability along the offensive line they would believe is going to clean up a lot of their issues. But it is funny that we don't think about them being the most penalized team in the NFL because that's how bad the defense was. Whereas, like, we don't even have time to talk about the penalty discussion because the defense is so terrible.
It's like special teams.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't – Atolo brought it up 2 weeks ago. We haven't talked about the special teams problems enough, and they're right.
Yeah. Next question here.
Because Aubrey got re-signed.
Cowboys mail. We'll talk about Aubrey at 8:40. Next year in the Cowboys mailbag, 817. Are you worried about Dak's mentals at all with the drama that's been going on this offseason?
I'm shocked that you would address this.
I'll let you answer first.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to address it. I don't have a problem, but I'm curious. Do you have any concern about that?
I did for a second, and then this past weekend, I saw his former fiance posting a lovely child's birthday party where they were either back together or they're just co-parenting with great smiles on their faces. So before I saw that, I was 5 to 10% worried. But after I saw that, I was like, all right, either they're back together or they're making it work. She posted a lot of pictures of the two of them. Now, they're not hugging and kissing, but they look very happy, and I was even surprised that she posted those if they're not getting back together. So that
one's
that,
wet, one's dry.
That alleviated some. It was a pool party, I think. That alleviated some of my concern.
Yeah, I think
because that can be something that
100%. I think naturally
messes with you.
I don't care who you are or how tough you are mentally or whatever else. I would have a concern that
I always wonder about that coach or player that's playing, and right before that, they got in a nasty spat. They got in a nasty fight, and it's just irritating you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, did they think about that in the first quarter or the second quarter? And then it's like, ugh, like I have to go home to settle this argument now over who didn't load the dishwasher.
Yeah. Or do you then like focus your energy like Tom Brady? Like, do you play better when your marriage is falling apart?
Uh-huh.
No, I think it's natural to wonder if it'll have an impact, and not in any sort of a, geez, I hope that guy's got his head right. Not in that sort of way at all. Literally just in the same way of when a family member dies or anything else, out of just almost like a concern of like, that's a really difficult thing. It's probably hard to just focus on your work. And the other part of me says that may be a nice escape. Focus on the work. You don't have to focus or worry about any of these things. I would expect that when we see Dak in front of the media this offseason, I would expect he's going to say something about it. Like, I'm guessing it'll come up and he'll answer it. And I think he's going to be locked in. He's had a lot of things happen in his life.
Yeah.
Since he's been the Cowboys quarterback. And I can't recall us thinking he was distracted by them. Like, we know he's dealt with them. We've talked about him, but I don't remember a time where we've thought like, man, he just doesn't look right or focused. There are times he doesn't play well, but I don't remember a time where anybody's felt like he's been distracted. So I'm concerned about it in the way that I would normally be concerned about any player going through something like that.
Or Vrabel.
Yeah.
You don't think, we'll get to the more at 8, you don't think Vrabel's going to coach in 2027,
mm-hmm.
and RJ said his guaranteed betting lock of the year, degenerate special, was the under on the Patriots' wins because of Rossini.
Yeah, that's one of those things where I do think it can impact you, and you gotta wonder, I need to see it. But we have seen from Dak pretty consistently, he seems to be able to compartmentalize and focus. And somebody just pointed out on the fan text, 817, look at Luka. Luka had everything happen, and then he went on a tear.
Yeah.
He started playing his best basketball. And so some guys need it for the escape or the focus or whatever else it may be. All right, Cowboys mailbag here. Dr. Mark Klee sending in, which I saw he had commented on your post the other day where he had said, love you guys. You guys have gotten me through some dark times before. Dr. Mark has always been one of our best, most loyal Tolos all the way from Austin. And has actually, we found out at one point, treated my daughter at an urgent care once years before I was ever on the station.
What?
Yeah. So he's a pediatrician. Wow. He's a great dude. So Dr. Mark is saying, what are the realistic expectations for Caleb Downs next season? Like, how good will he be compared to league average? What are your realistic expectations for his career? So I think, and when this has been, I want to prepare people. I don't want to tamp down expectations. I think Caleb Downs is going to be as good as you think he's going to be. I think the thing we need to discuss or prepare for is, I don't think being as good as you think he's going to be is going to also equal up to stats that show he's that good.
Not
going to
be Ed Reed.
No, like, he's not going to have 10 interceptions. He's not going to score 3 touchdowns. It's not going to be like, oh my gosh, look at Caleb Downs. How many times did he blow up a quarterback, and then look at this huge game-changing interception? I would guess his first-year stats look something like 100 tackles, 2 interceptions, 6 pass breakups, and a sack or something. Like, his numbers could very well look like that. And that sounds maybe a little disappointing. What he is and what he's going to be asked to do is going to be such a stronger impact on the unit as a whole and in just stabilizing things. That's how you're going to notice him, is that he's going to stabilize it. It's the conversation of years ago. This is, I think, 7 years ago or something like that. Darren Woodson was at a party and for around the Super Bowl time, and Mike Zimmer was there. And I had heard this story relayed. Mike Zimmer called him over and he was like, Woody, I got to apologize to you. He's like, why? He said, you were too good. He said, you were too good, and we weren't good enough when I had you. And he's like, and I needed you to do a lot of things. And I made you play linebacker, and I made you play nickel, and I made you play safety, and I needed you to do all these things for me. And he's like, you weren't able to just sit at a position and collect stats. He's like, and I think that probably hurt your Hall of Fame chances. And I feel like, and basically apologized, like saying, like, I feel some responsibility that, like, if I – You were so good that if we could have just had you play one spot, if you were just so versatile and so good, you probably could have collected the numbers that other guys did, and then it wouldn't have even been a question. And Woody, of course, was like, dude, no, like that was my job. And that's what made him great. That's what makes him a Hall of Famer. But it kind of works counter. I think it's the same thing with Caleb Downs. Caleb Downs is going to be such a great player. They're going to ask him to do so much that it's not going to just look like stat collecting. It's going to be about, where are we, like, completely unstable? Where do we have instability? Caleb, you fix that. And then we'll worry about everybody else doing things to like, make a difference. And so I think he's going to make a big difference. I think right away he is going to play at a Pro Bowl level. I just don't know if it's going to look that way statistically. Is that generally where you've been at expecting for him? Like, you're not thinking, man, we're going to have, like, easy defensive player of the year gaudy statistics?
Yeah, I mean, my first thing with Caleb Downs is he's going to be out there organizing people. Like, I'm hoping for my number one thing is not the ball hawking interceptions or blowing people up when they're carrying the football. It is being the quarterback of the defense and being an instant leader out there with his brain. Number two, my number one anticipatory highlight is Caleb Downs sniffing out run plays, screens, just things when they show the overhead shot, when they're like, look at the beat that he had on this play. Look at the anticipation. He knew it was coming, and boom, he's there to blow it up. And then I'm curious / worried about him as a slot corner. I'm worried a little bit, and Choppy's going to be bragging and letting you have it nonstop.
If he's here,
if he gets torched a few times, or for that 60 or 70 yarder when he was basically, you know, singled up or playing man, quote unquote, in Christian Parker's defense against some of the best slot guys in the league.
Not going to happen.
Okay.
Not going to happen. Okay. You guys can take solace in that. I think that I remember Ted Wynn from The Athletic had a play that he had shared a couple weeks ago on Twitter, a couple weeks before the draft. And it's this play of Sonny Styles, like, blowing something up. And you see this play, and Ted Wynn goes, this is just fantastic stuff from Caleb Downs. And, like, people who watch it on the surface are like, what are you talking about? Like, he just blew this up. And he broke down, like, You got to see what Caleb Downs does here, the reactionary athleticism he has to get in position and take this away to where the quarterback had to move to this side and to do something. Made an easy cleanup play for Sonny Styles. But on the stat sheet, it looks like, wow, Sonny Styles really wrecked that play.
Yeah.
When in reality, in the film room, they're saying Caleb Downs wrecked that play. And that's something where I think you're going to see a lot of the impact. All right, Cowboys mailbag here. Next question from Max on Twitter. Jonathan Bullard, why isn't he getting talked about much? So Jonathan Bullard was obviously one of their later signings that they had along the defensive line. I would expect that early on he's probably going to start. He'll start next to Quinnen Williams and Kenny Clark, a late addition for them, and a long-term veteran that's been around the NFL now, I think, for like 9 years. But I think realistically the reason why you're not hearing anything big about Jonathan Bullard is, A, what does he play? Which is, he's going to play an edge setting, like eat up blockers, just do your job type of responsibility. And the gap and a half stuff that Christian Parker talked about with us in Indianapolis, it's not going to be very flashy. So I think a lot of people just, it's going to be easy for Jonathan Bullard not to be thought of alongside Kenny Clark,
yeah,
or, you know, Quinnen Williams or some of the other guys that they have there. But also just kind of late in the offseason, the addition, it flew under the radar. I think a lot of people probably forget that he was even signed. But he's definitely somebody who I think fans should be excited about, in the sense that before he signed, that was a massive just black hole after they traded Osa, of like, who's playing there? You don't have somebody to even step in and just give you stable play. Jonathan Bullard is like a model of stable, average to a little above average consistency in a job that isn't going to like make a lot of waves to begin with. And so to be able to get that and just say, hey, I know that's going to be consistent and I know what I'm getting out of that position, that's something that I think fans should be excited about in terms of...
Excited?
Yeah, I think excited, because what was so damaging about last season? Guys who just didn't do their jobs and were completely fooled or negligent or confused and blew things up. Bullard is like...
He had a 59 PFF, but it may be a tougher position.
60
to,
is average.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I mean, he's going to be just an average guy who... He's not going to rack up a bunch of stats. He's not going to also be just somebody that you're going to see blown out of the running game a lot. He's just going to be stable, consistent, other guys doing their jobs around them. It just creates stability. And stability is honestly a big part of what they need right now. All right, next question here. Got time for one more?
One more.
One more. All right, this is from Titanic Gambler. What are the things that make you most optimistic about the 26 Cowboys? What is the things that worry you the most? Before I get to that, you got anything right off the top of your head that you're excited about or worried about still?
Christian and Caleb. That's it.
Can those both be the same answer? Because I think that might be the answer for me.
Yeah.
Christian Parker is what I'm most excited about. Christian Parker is what I'm most worried about. Like, I mean, I think he's going to be really good. I don't know. And I think it's, like I said earlier, it's really difficult to anticipate that this defense will be any worse than it was last year. It can only get better. And so from that perspective, it shouldn't be too terribly concerning, but there's such high expectations for what he's building and the vision that he has, that if that were to come out during the regular season and he just struggles a ton to adjust to stuff and the growing pains are more intense than you initially expect, that I think is going to be very depleting to a lot of morale and make it feel like, oh, okay, this wasn't just took you a couple weeks to get your legs under you. This is a whole season where you had to figure out how to call a defense. That would be pretty demoralizing, I think, for them. So, I think that Christian Parker, Caleb Downs, both of those guys are massive encouragements for what they want to do. And at the same time, both of them having not done it before.
Especially when you're starting off, by the way, against the Giants and the Commanders. Now, again, I think we may be guilty of sleeping on Washington and Jaden Daniels a little bit too much. And you got all this New York excitement with the new coach and Dart and the frat bros. But you'd like to see a pretty quick start against two teams that everyone is going to have you better than in the NFC East.
Yep.
And then you're going to get C.J. Stroud. Like, don't have C.J. Stroud light you up.
Don't have him figure it back out again
yeah.
with you. No, he. And I think that's the thing, is that there is a ton to be excited about them. And then also at the same time, because they've never done it before, Parker's never called the defense, Downs is a rookie, and you're talking about those are the two biggest reasons you think things are going to be better this year for people you've never seen do it. That's a lot. And you can even feel confident that it's going to go the right way. It's a little terrifying to lean on your greatest reasons for optimism are things you've never seen before. And I think that it's going to work out for them. But, yeah, I think both of those are – they can be equally exciting and concerning. And that's what I think both of those are.
Thank you, Lucius. It's the G-Bag Nation here on The Fan. You know every day at this time it's time for Krusty's Corner with Brian Broaddus, brought to you by Greystone Roofing. Go to greystone-roofing.com. Here's the king.
Hey, hey, kids! Your old pal Krusty's going to teach you 5 new words.
You're not wrong about that.
From Dallas, Texas, number 55, Brian Broaddus.
Thank you very much, Lucius. Appreciate you always playing that. Thank you to Greystone for being a part of this one as well. Before we get started, I was just looking at something during the break. I was just curious. Because we were talking about red zone efficiencies and things like that and, you know, being able to score. But this one came across, I was just curious. There are 4 teams in the league last year that did not attempt a quarterback sneak. 4 teams in the whole league that did not attempt 1 quarterback sneak. Would you guys like to throw a guess at which 4 teams there were?
Were the Cowboys one?
Cowboys were not one of them.
Okay.
Steelers.
Steelers were not one of them.
So I'm trying to think of like the oldest, most.
Chiefs?
Chiefs were one of them.
Yeah, they
Chiefs got their quarterback blown up. Mahomes
dislocated the knee
remember,
on that.
Yeah, he got blown up the one time, so they stopped doing that. Okay, there's 3 more teams.
NFC, AFC.
All 3 of them are in the NFC that are left.
Oh, okay.
Arizona.
Giants?
Giants and Arizona would be incorrect.
Rams?
Rams would be incorrect.
Panthers.
Panthers are 1.
Yeah, with Bryce
Young.
Tiny man. Tiny quarterback. Call. Tiny quarterback, man.
Falcons.
No.
Arizona? No, they definitely are. They definitely did. We said that one. Yeah. With Brissett, he's good at that.
Niners?
Washington?
Washington is another one. You've got 1 left.
So these are injury-prone guys, you think?
And this last one is surprising because the quarterback has some toughness to him as a runner.
Seattle?
Not going to run a lot, but when he runs, he has toughness. He's one of those guys that when they show the highlights, he's kind of...
Bucks?
Goff.
It's the Bucks.
Oh, Baker. Oh,
Baker. Baker Mayfield. Carolina, Kansas City, Tampa, and Washington. The 4 teams that did not attempt 1 quarterback sneak last year. What if the Philadelphia Eagles were the ones that did the most?
Oh, I would bet sure. They are. Yeah. With the tush-push.
Yeah.
Bills probably right there with them.
I'm hearing, though, that maybe Hurts doesn't want to do that anymore.
Good.
He doesn't want to get Philadelphia, his tush pushed.
Philadelphia had 27 quarterback sneaks last year is what they had. I think that's number 1 in the league. But just interesting. You usually think about your quarterback. Second most would have been the 49ers. So there was 27 and then 20 by the 49ers. So usually you think your team, if you have a small quarterback, don't want to get your veteran quarterback hurt. That surprised me a little bit about Tampa, though. Dawson.
Yeah.
And I teased about guys that are backup guys. And I know we're in June or getting close to being in June. And we're looking for that radio content stuff. So you're kind of just going through the roster and saying, well, I wonder if we're thinking about this or thinking about that a little bit. Dawson, I wonder, are we forgetting about Kalen Carson and Josh Butler on this defense, in the secondary?
You know, I think we're forgetting about them in terms of could be depth, could be like your 5th and 6th corners. You know, maybe they're better than Bridges and Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think as far as like staying on the football team, I think they got a pretty good shot. You know, Kalen Carson's had a couple of good games, and Josh Butler definitely had some good games in 2024. He was their best tackling DB in 2024, probably, or at least their corners. So, yeah, I think that's a good point.
We're not talking about him nearly enough.
No.
I mean, I think we're talking about him in the right manner. Like, how much time do I want to spend talking about a fifth or sixth corner on a roster? Now, is it fair to assume that...
I didn't interrupt you.
No, you're good. My apologies. It's your segment, dude.
I did. No, I interrupted you.
If this was ball maxing, I'd be mad at you.
It's a fun part of the show with you interrupting, Brian.
But, I mean, the way you said it, though, I mean, and I'm asking you this question in a way of, do you feel like because there are so many questions at cornerback...
Everybody should be in the mix? To some extent, you might be right there, and I do think it's fair with Christian Parker coming in and that being his expertise, being in the back end of a defense. Like, maybe everyone can be a little bit better than what we've seen before, but for like a guy like Kalen Carson, like, he's going to need to be a lot better for it to really matter. So I'm kind of thinking about the top guys here, which there's questions about them as well, but right. I'm thinking about Bland, Revel, and Durant. What can you guys do? And hopefully it's enough to where we're not worried about having Kalen Carson and Josh Butler running out there.
Man, they really do need some depth, though. And they need somebody to step up. They need somebody to have a great offseason.
And they're going
to
need those guys to play. I mean, like, if there's one thing, yeah, it'd be great if Bland and Revel and these guys are awesome, but they haven't been able to stay on the football field.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you ended up having to play Corey Ballantyne meaningful snaps last year, Triquez Bridges. I mean, they were playing poor Elijah Clark. They had to move him over to corner in a game against Denver last year.
Yeah.
So all these guys are going to end up having to contribute for you, I believe, in a 17-game season. I don't think Carson fits this category. I think Butler does. Josh Butler's not talked about. He's like a forgotten guy. And I was surprised they didn't elevate him last year. Maybe he wasn't ready. Maybe the coaching staff didn't like him. But I was impressed with what we saw prior to his injury against Washington 2 years ago. I think you're absolutely right. He was tough. He would tackle at corner. I thought he showed some pretty good coverage. If he's healthy, like, Josh Butler could be a sneaky player that ends up giving you some meaningful snaps that you were not talking about at all.
Isn't he, like, slower than a slug, though?
His testing was, like, his story coming from Michigan State, like, he was undrafted. He did not test well. He's a dude that's made it totally just on effort and just being a guy that you couldn't cut. So, and there's something, like, I need some of those guys in my team. You know, like, Josh Butler's a player that you kind of root for with that mentality. He's got kind of that chip on his shoulder.
I like what you said there, Wolchuk.
Well, it's crazy to be a corner and you run like a 4.75.
Right.
Like, yeah, that's unheard of.
But he's right about the technical aspects and stuff
that. Yeah.
I just think and that's why I interrupted you rudely. I just think with this cornerback group, I think everybody should be in play.
Yeah.
But I don't think we're talking about a guy that might make this team. They're like, wow, we didn't think about that guy because we really haven't been talking about those guys at all. Those particular guys. Chief,
yep.
You can only trade for one. You only trade for Josh Sweat or Jordan Brooks.
Yeah.
Who are you trading for?
Yeah.
You only trade for one.
It's a great question. It's a win-win either way, right?
Linebacker Brooks, by the way, Miami Dolphins. Sweat probably could be a guy that you could have. By the way, would you be willing to give a second-round pick for that?
Bobby is. Bobby was very willing this morning. Walchuk's on the second round pick bandwagon. I mean, I think the good thing about Sweat is you have a few years of control contractually, and
it's not a lot of money.
I mean, in year one, if you traded for him this 15? Season, it would be under $11 million under on your 11? Salary cap, and then it would go up to 18
according to Spotrac. But even at 18 for that type of player, that's like half the price you're paying for somebody you're going to sign in free agency.
Yeah, and that's part of. Probably what plays into the idea that I would rather have Sweat because Brooks is on the last year of his deal, and if he has another season like he had last year, like he's gonna command some big money on the market. And Sweat, I just think this defense needs more pass rushers, and he's got familiarity with Christian Parker, of course. So with the contract, the control, the position that he plays, give me the pass rush, dude.
Dawson, can I ask you a question real quick?
Yeah.
Okay, if you take Chiefs, what he just said, and trade for Sweat, did you make a mistake then drafting Lawrence in the first round?
No, because I think you got to stack these guys up, you know, and you got to give yourself as many chances as possible of having a double-digit sack guy, and I think Josh Sweat can do that for you. As long as he doesn't want a new contract, I think I would prefer him. You know, I think Jordan Brooks has said he doesn't want to be a green dot guy. So it's fixing a lot of stuff for you, but it's not fixing everything if you get Jordan Brooks. And just like the way I look at it often is if both these guys were on the free agent market, like Sweat might get three times what Brooks does.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of tells you what the value is.
Yeah, I just think it's his contract's a great value right now. And you add in the familiarity in the scheme in which he led the Eagles in sacks 2 years ago. Now, granted, that was only with eight, but that's what this defense is going to be about. It's having a bunch of different guys that can go and accumulate 5 to 8 sacks a year. Now, he's one of the guys that could give you 12. That's what he had last year with Arizona. Now, all of a sudden, I'm looking at my edge rushers. I've got Gary and Sweat. I have Ezeraku and Lawrence, who I can like ease into this thing now. And then my third wave is Sam. I'm going to go with Sweat here. Yeah.
Okay.
My third wave would then be Williams and Houston. I am now feeling so much better, and I feel like I actually do have a quality pass rush that I can rotate, I can keep fresh, and I can battle with anybody now in the league. Linebacker's a huge need, but to me, I know this guy can play in the defense. I'll take Josh Sweat for that reason.
Are you just immediately moving Ezeraku to left outside linebacker? Is he no longer a right edge rusher? He's now become like a guy behind Gary. Play the run. Don't worry about pass rush.
You could do that, yeah, if you want to play Lawrence at left and have him back up Josh Sweat, or I would just have Ezeraku backing up Sweat.
I would put Lawrence as a right outside linebacker, okay, as a rusher. And okay, I'm saying what you're telling me.
Because he's listed right now as a left. That's fine.
To me, what you're looking at, though, is you're saying that you don't think that, and I'm saying not you, but you out there are thinking if you bring this guy on board, you're moving Donovan Ezeraku behind.
Yeah, Ezeraku doesn't have to start necessarily. Now, I think that it's semantics. I think all these guys are going to rotate and get snaps.
Sure.
But, yeah, now I feel so much better. I think that that's been the telling thing to me with both these Super Bowl defenses in Seattle and Philly. It's having a lot. Yeah, it's having a lot of guys. They can just go. You're keeping them fresh, and you're just letting them go.
But I think it's a good point, man. It kind of stops me in my tracks because I am betting Ezeraku is going to have a good year. You bring in BT Jordan. The pressures were there. He's just got to refine some stuff and get stronger. I think Ezeraku is going to blow up. And if bringing in Josh Sweat would take him out of the mix in a significant way, I would have to weigh that in the Ezeraku or Brooks discussion.
Appreciate you guys.
You got it. Krusty's Corner every day, 3:40 here, brought to you by Greystone Roofing. Go to greystone-roofing.com.
At Vistaprint, we know you've got that idea for your business, like the one that nails the trade show, levels up your brand, or makes your team say,
"We're really doing this."
But an idea is just an idea until it's printed on
signage, giveaways, custom apparel.
Once it's
in my hands, on my team, out in the world,
then it's happening.
It's so happening.
Vistaprint has thousands of products, easy design tools, and real support to turn that idea into something possible. Print your possible with code NEW20 for 20% off your first order at Vistaprint.com.
What is Toyota affordability? It's buying smart. Right now, your local Toyota dealer has great deals available on some of the most reliable trucks on the market, like the off-road ready Tacoma, rugged full-size Tundra, and the legendary 4Runner, each with the space, tech, and features to handle it all, from the worksite to the trails. It means driving for less with efficient hybrid options available, extending your overall driving range, and delivering great MPGs, meaning bigger savings at the pump without sacrificing power. And it means trading for more. The Tacoma and Tundra are ranked #1 and #2 in resale value over all vehicles according to Kelley Blue Book, which can mean thousands more than average when it's time to trade in. That's Toyota affordability. Buy smart, drive for less, and trade for more. Shop Toyota.com or your local dealer for deals and details. Vehicles projected resale value is specific to the 2026 model year. For more information, visit Kelley Blue Book's KBB.com. Toyota brand average resale value is 53% versus the average vehicle at 45%. Toyota, let's go places.
When equipment breaks down and operations come to a halt, every single second counts. So why is your maintenance team spending 60% of their time doing anything but turning wrenches? Maintain X is the AI-powered maintenance and asset management system that helps your team get back to actually fixing breakdowns. No more searching for manuals. No more hunting down parts. No more drowning in paperwork. With Maintain X, your team can access manuals from anywhere, create new procedures in minutes, and turn voice notes into clear and complete work order feedback. What used to take hours now only takes minutes. Keep your operations moving and your wrenches turning. Join over 13,000 maintenance teams that are already fixing more and filing less.
Try MaintainX for free today. Go to MaintainX.com/AI. That's Maintain and the letter X.com/AI.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch. Did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snapple!